red letter N unfolds into a spectrum of colours.
Titles. The following film contains graphic descriptions of sexual violence which some viewers may find troubling. Viewer discretion is advised. A smartly dressed woman approaches a group of journalists.
Is everyone ready? Because I won't say it twice. For 1 year and 11 months, a family has been suffering the loss of this person.
La pérdida de esta persona.
And on Saturday, you called this a melodrama.
Como culebrón.
On Sunday, you described it as being like an Almodóvar film. This isn't a melodrama. It's a trial about a 19-year-old girl.
News reports. In Mijas, Malaga, a desperate search is going on to find a 19-year-old woman.
Rocío Vannikov.
Rocío, la joven Rocío Vannikov.
It was massive in the press, television and radio. It was one of the cases receiving a lot of media attention during those years.
In all of Spain, not just on the Costa del Sol, not just in Malaga, this was a story that had all sorts of things for journalists, for papers.
It was a very, very major case which had gripped the nation.
Criminology is in search of an answer that we haven't yet found. Why do some people cross that line and end up killing others?
I'm a criminologist as well as a lawyer, and this case is a paradigm for any student of law.
A woman in distress.
What value is put on women's lives astounds me sometimes.
Newspaper articles with the name Rocío Vannikov flash up and a photo of the dark-haired young woman. An aerial view of country roads and waves on a shore. The waves are superimposed over the countryside and buildings. A Netflix original documentary. A brutal media production. Archive researcher Lisa Berger with a photo. Line producer Jordi Pereira. Director of photography Mark Duran. An aerial view of a sunny city with hills in the background. Photos of numbered pieces of evidence. Editor Carlos Prieto, AMAC. A country track. Music by Alfred Tapscott. A sunset and a movie camera. Written by Gonzalo Berger. Production manager Arlette Peyret. Executive producers Raymond Maslorens, Carol Salina. Waves Wash the Shore. Directed by Tanya Ballo. The title. El Caso Vannikov Caravantes. Murder by the coast. An aerial view of a seashore and a few people on a sandy beach. A title. La Cala de Mijas, Andalusia, Spain. Sunshades on the beach give way to neat gardens, buildings and swimming pools. Bunting flaps in a gentle breeze across a narrow street with a multitude of potted plants. People sit outside an exchange bureau with union flag logos and advertising free commission. A newsstand with international broadsheets and a rack of postcards. A group of women slide open a metal gate to an open-air sports court and kick a ball around.
Well, there were lots of us to begin with. And Rocío Star was with us from the start. She didn't... It's not like she really liked football, but she did enjoy the fun we had, and...
Tried it and she liked it.
She wore number 6, which is the position she liked to play.
We each had our number.
Our assigned number, and we'd argue if anyone changed it. Our friends and relatives sat here.
Yeah, everyone came. Her mother came, Rocío, Rosa, Alicia, everyone came.
All the mummies sat here.
When the girls scored, Rocío and I did this.
What did you do? Let's see.
This is what they did.
A clapping routine.
No copyright.
Yeah, and then we'd run imitating her. And she'd say, no copyright, no copyright. That's it.
We were just kids. We were 15 to 16 years old. We were just kids.
Photos of Rocío and the smiling team.
She was really in love with Tony, her boyfriend at the time.
In love, yes.
Yeah, she was crazy about him.
Well, Tony was the most handsome guy.
Yeah, he was the most good-looking, and so was she, yeah.
They were a beautiful couple.
The smiling couple and friends.
She was a lot of fun.
Yeah, a lot of fun. She was always smiling.
I never saw her get annoyed with anyone.
With anyone, she never got angry.
She was always up for a laugh. She was always up for a laugh.
The friends nod, smile, and look thoughtful. Night at the sports pitch. An ornate white and gilt gateway in daytime with cars parked beyond, then illuminated at night. The glittering lights of a fun fair. Fabrice Martin, Rocio Vanikoff's friend.
Come on, let's go, take a look.
I remember how back then, I don't know whether it was 2 or 3 years in a row, they set up a heavy metal stand at the fair. There was the entrance to the fair and the area with the rides and stuff for the kids, and then there was the area with stalls where you could eat and you could dance. And the back section was the area for young people, the area right next to the river, which is where they set up 4 shacks, as we called them, and that's where we drink calimocho, which is what we had back then. A lot of calimocho, a lot of heavy metal, a lot of rock, but it was really a great vibe, to be honest, always.
A title, 1999, 9th of October. Lights reflected in rippling water.
So that night we'd arranged to meet at the stand, and I remember it was, I don't know, 10 at night. A few of us were there, waiting. So, of course, an hour goes by, another, and Rocío never showed up. We waited there for her, and she didn't show up.
An aerial view of the illuminated rides as they turn and swing. An aerial view of the coastal city in pale orange twilight. The view descends towards an apartment complex, then flies over nighttime roads. A solitary figure walks in the pale glow of streetlights.
She left her boyfriend's house. It was a really long hill. There were no lights at all. Fields all around. And, well, she never came.
The view becomes dark. A car's headlights cast a moving patch of light. A blurred view resolves into a doorway and a low-lit room. There's a backpack on a single bed, a lamp on the bedside table, and a digital clock showing 21:57, a desk with a lamp, and another on a bookshelf. A framed photo of smiling Rocío. Light flares outside the window. A seaside residential area in sunshine. A title, Missing Day One. Alicia Hornos, Rocío Vanikoff's mother.
That night, my daughter never shows up, so we go and look for her. We walk along, and I see a stain, quite a big one. I say, oh, look at that really big blood stain over there. And I say, looks like someone's killed an animal. So I go a little closer. And I see my daughter's trainers. Those are Rocío's trainers. And Juan says, no, no way. I say, those are my daughter's trainers, please call. Well, I got hysterical, crazy. I say, call the police, those are my daughter's trainers.
A police form showing Rocío's name, mother, the surname Vanikoff, Hornos, and Malaga. Features are circled, hair long, type wavy, eyes brown.
When she was reported missing, we had a call from the examining magistrate to say that there was a possible crime scene and to ask us if we could offer our forensic input. And our first assessment we made is that an incident had in fact taken place, which had resulted in a large quantity of blood. In this case, we concluded that someone had been attacked. A blunt force trauma to the nose or mouth. We even considered that a bladed weapon might have been used. From there, we found much larger, more extensive trails of blood that indicated the person had been moving much more quickly, running perhaps. Then these disappeared for a section, and we reached an area with a much bigger blood stain, indicating that there had been significant blood loss. Further bloodstains were found that were consistent with what we thought was a body being dragged. They stopped in an area where, as far as I remember, there were vehicle tracks that we used to identify both the tires and the vehicle. We discovered a bloodstained tissue. and a pair of trainers that were identified as belonging to the victim.
That was Dr. Francisco Alvarez Gonzalez, medical examiner. On forms, police report, samples for analysis, traces of blood, two trainers, on the tissue, cigarette stub.
All the cigarette stubs found were sent to try and identify any DNA from the saliva on the stubs. We collected everything that we thought might provide any type of information as to the presence of someone who could, at some point, be identified using those samples.
On a form, the cigarette stub contains the DNA of a male.
From there, we began a very extensive search using that data.
In sunshine, low-rise white apartments, an area of waste ground, a missing poster. Fabrice Martin.
I don't remember exactly who called me or how I found out Rocío had been missing since that night we'd arranged to meet. I remember how that morning I put on the news and heard on the news on the radio how Rocío Vaninkoff had disappeared. And it hit me, I started to cry. My boss said, "What's the matter?" I said, "It's my friend, I don't know. What happened?" And that's when I started to hear that in La Cala, the local police, medical personnel were looking, had started a search operation. So I asked my boss if I could join the search, me and the rest of my friends too.
People pore over maps. There are officers in uniform and volunteers search a hillside. Rocio's mother.
I'm asking everyone to please bring my daughter back and to treat her as well as possible. So many people. Thank you so much to the many people who are helping us.
She compresses her lips. A crowd of searchers and vehicles on a hilltop. Police stop traffic. Members of the public are interviewed.
I have three girls too of similar age, and we live here in La Cala, and we've come to offer our support.
To support the mother, the father, and the whole family.
We're going to try and keep piling on the pressure, and we won't give up until Rocío has been found.
The search for Rocío continues.
The 19-year-old girl who went missing on Saturday.
A week after beginning the search, in which over 600 people took part.
Young guys on motorcycles.
A group of us went with the civil defense, another group went with the local police. Some of us went out by ourselves on our dirt bikes up into the hills. Searching, just like someone looking for a needle in a haystack, searching, and we were anxious, thinking, oh man, what if something happened to her and I find her? What if I lift a manhole cover and find her? What if I decide to look behind that tree? And what if...
Fabrice shakes his head.
It was really hard.
On the hill, a woman crouches. Candles burn in plastic bottles. The searchers stand and talk after dark. Ignacio San Martin, journalist, Cadena Ser.
I remember going with a colleague. We parked the broadcast van outside Alicia Horner's house. People were constantly coming and going. The family came out to talk to the media every few minutes. We were calling for them.
If no one is there, if no one says anything, if no one talks, then people forget. And as you can see, all the media are here. The press is here. All the TV stations are here. It's the only way to keep this alive.
I want them to give her back, man. Whether she's alive or dead, I just want them to give her back.
Rosa Vaninkoff, Rocio's sister.
3 weeks had gone by, and, there were a lot of tears, a lot of anxiety over her disappearance, a lot of crying. And everyone felt it, not just the family, who were the most affected, but also the volunteers too, her friends from school, her friends from the neighborhood. That was basically the whole mood, a mood of pervasive sadness.
Guillermo Vaninkoff, Rocio Vaninkoff's father, then Rosa Vaninkoff, Rocio's sister, then Jose Maria Camacho, journalist, ABC newspaper. Rocio's mother and sister sit looking worried. Close-up views of dry plants. A view across a meadow towards houses and trees. A title, Missing Day 25.
We're bringing news that we'd hoped we'd never have to share. The discovery of a body that may be that of Rocío Vaninkoff, 25 days after her disappearance.
Police tape marks off an area and the view moves towards a copse of evergreen trees.
The body was found kind of hidden in a hedge within a housing development, just 200 meters from the motorway to Marbella. And along a path, you could barely get a vehicle down.
The medical examiner titles Marbella, 30 kilometers from La Cala de Mijas.
When they went to remove the body, they found a cadaver that was practically just bones, that looked more like a cadaver that had been there a long time. And while they were collecting samples, they found some bags, big black bin bags, in which they found some clothing, particularly some T-shirts. Based on those T-shirts, we began to feel reasonably confident that the cadaver might belong to the girl, to Rocío Vanikoff.
The aerial view looks vertically down at buildings and waste ground. Houses at dusk. People are gathered. A view of a house, then people inside and a woman wiping her face with a handkerchief. Flowers and a framed photo of Rocío. People leave flowers on the sunny, dusty hillside. Fabrice.
You know what? I go past there every day. I remember every day. Every day I'm drawn to turn my head and look on the way there, on the way back. And I think, we were searching here, and she was found 20 kilometers away.
Fabrice, tight-lipped, closes his eyes and shrugs. After dark, candles and floral tributes are left. The profusion of candles flicker brightly. People stand looking pensive. The candles flicker in the darkness with the flowers behind. Cut to a darkened mortuary room with a post-mortem table in the center. Dr. Francisco Alvarez Gonzalez.
When we carried out the autopsy, the five medical examiners present, six, we actually worked a little clandestinely because we knew that there was huge media attention. And we completed the autopsy, we spent a lot of time on it, we finished during the night, and tried to apply all our knowledge because we knew that the repercussions were huge. What we had was a cadaver that was going to provide us with much less information than it might have done if it had undergone normal decomposition. That's because under certain conditions, humidity, rain, heat, a decomposition occurs much more quickly. There were no organs, meaning all we had was bones. So we had to find other things that might tell us or give us an indication as to what happened during the attack. The cadaver showed a series of injuries, mostly to the back. I think there were around eight very similar stab wounds produced by a single-edged bladed weapon. Conclusions? Well, that this was a very brutal attack, very repetitive. It would seem that the assailant carried out the attack within a very short time frame, because basically the victim is either totally immobilized or he acts so quickly that she doesn't have time to move.
Cut back to the empty autopsy room. Daytime and umbrellas are dusted with snow. A crowd is gathered on a street under gray skies. A coffin with flowers, a white teddy bear and a lamp beside it. I have no doubt that they feel their hearts are broken. My thoughts and feelings are with them. And especially with you, the parents and siblings. Women carry the coffin. Stop that now, please. Come on. Viva Rocío, viva. Make your way out, please. Please, a little respect. Come on now. Let us through. Let us through, please. Please make your way out. Push. A little push. Here we go. We're going to push again. Come on, push. Goodbye, beautiful. Goodbye. Come on, a little further forward. Come on, a little bit more. Leave her mother alone for a moment. Come on, her mother, please. Crowds have gathered. A plaque with Rocio's name is cemented into place. Paz Velasco de la Fuente, criminologist.
At that point, naturally, everyone around Rocio and even everyone from Rocio's village is scared. And that fear is in part fed by the social panic built by the press, particularly all the television programs about the case. In the end, that led to the secondment of an elite group of the Civil Guard, which had played an active role in the Alcázar investigation, and they were welcomed with open arms. The detectives find fingerprints on the plastic bags at the scene of death. They analyze the track marks found on the esplanade, and they find two fabric fibers on Rocio Vaninkoff's body.
Jose Maria Camacho.
At that time, the clues did not yet point to the arrest of any particular person. But there were certain details, elements and hypotheses that could, that the Civil Guard were exploring.
And with this as yet unresolved crime, we all ask ourselves the same questions. Who committed the crime and when will an arrest be made?
The investigating officers needed to find something. The public pressure was huge, and they had nothing. As Velasco de la Fuente.
The poor condition of Rocio's cadaver made it impossible to determine certain basic facts, that, such as, for example, whether Rocio had been sexually assaulted.
Details on a visual inspection report.
So what happened? Well, one of the hypotheses and conclusions reached by the investigating officers when they saw the corpse with its legs spread wide apart, because they were so wide apart, they believed it to be staged. In other words, that the perpetrator had altered the crime scene to make the scene look similar to a sexual assault. Therefore, they ruled out sexual assault and focused on the motive of hatred and revenge.
De la venganza.
Could this be a crime of passion?
Someone very close to the family, very passionate and very resentful.
That is...
very well known to the family.
That is the expert opinion of Margarita Landi, which I agree with to an extent.
And so they begin to question the people closest to Rocio Vaninkoff.
A document. We hereby proceed to bear witness to the statement made by... acting officers, Jose Maria Camacho.
They even questioned her boyfriend, and even Rocio's family, and everyone. They all had an alibi.
Could you answer just one question?
It will soon be a year since the death of Rocio Vaninkoff. For now, the Civil Guard has narrowed down the number of prime suspects to three, two men and one woman.
Towards the end of the year, they honed in on one suspect against whom they supposedly had some conclusive evidence.
In the end, the thing that aroused suspicion was when someone reported having seen a woman stab Rocio's photo.
It seems that police are getting closer to finding the person who killed Rocio Vaninkoff.
Not only do details of a suspect begin to leak, but a full name even emerges. Dolores Vázquez.
A police car drives away past the Mijas Municipal Swimming Pool. Women weep, stand thoughtfully, and Rocio's mother sits on a bench talking. TV cameras, one on top of a car. Journalists hold microphones by the front gate of a house as people emerge. Live, La Cala de Mijas, Malaga. Now you can see, it's Loli Vázquez. Vázquez is escorted to a car, a title, September 2000. The car drives off, a news program, Telediario.
In the early hours of the 9th of October last year, a 19-year-old woman was murdered, stabbed in the back 10 times. Her body was found following a long search. Today, a friend of the young woman's mother has spent 5 hours in front of the magistrate, accused of her murder.
Everybody out of the way. Alicia Hornos.
The police called to say that they had arrested Maria Dolores Vázquez, Loli. I wasn't expecting that. She's the last person I would have expected. She was really good to me when I separated. She really helped me with my kids, collecting them from school, taking them here and there, bathing them, making dinner, many things.
As Vázquez emerges from a building in handcuffs, the crowd chants, "Murderer, murderer." The car carrying Vasquez moves slowly through the crowd. News report.
Her name is Maria Dolores Vasquez, a close friend of the girl's mother. Dolores is a close friend of Alicia.
A close friend to them all. Dolores Vasquez, a friend of the family, accused of killing the daughter of her former close friend, Alicia Hornos.
She was the best friend of Rocio's mother.
She watched her grow up. She helped raise her. They say she was like a second mother to her.
They bought this house in Mijas, and they began a new life together with Alicia's three children.
A photo of Rocio with her brother and sister, Jose Maria Camacho.
The victim's mother, Alicia, is someone who had three children. She'd separated from her husband who lived in Holland, and she'd formed a relationship with someone. She was part of a couple with Dolores Vasquez.
They were in an intimate relationship for 11 years. She'd helped raise Alicia's daughters. But at the time of the offense, the intimate relationship had already been over for 4 years.
A photo of Vasquez in handcuffs. Alicia Hornos.
I loved her more than I've ever loved anyone. Truly. She gave me affection, support, she comforted me. And I loved her. I really loved that woman.
My daughter lived with them for many years when she came to Malaga to study. And during that time, she was with Loli, her aunt, and with Alicia and Rocio. All the girls are lovely. And so is Alicia. So for us, it was all perfectly normal.
Elvira and Carmina Vasquez, Dolores Vasquez's sisters.
The investigation focused its attention on Dolores Vasquez, and there was the motive. One of the motives that any jury or any professional tribunal could begin to understand, which is that the girl was an obstacle, or was against, or was a problem for the relationship that Dolores had with the mother. So now we have a motive.
Loli said that if it weren't for Rocio, I would get back with her. That's why my daughter was killed. Because if she hadn't been so jealous, if she hadn't felt that I was with someone else, maybe my daughter would still be alive. So she did it for revenge. She did it because I didn't want to get back with her.
Jose Antonio Martin Palin, Supreme Court Justice, then Alicia Hornos. Prison corridors with barred gates. Paz Velasco de la Fuente.
Dolores Vasquez, in the eyes of the media and public opinion, was guilty from the moment she was arrested.
What do you think, Margarita? What does your heart tell you?
I have to say yes, I think she's guilty.
Although she hasn't confessed, La Cala de Mijas residents are in no doubt.
There were rumors. Things were already being said about this person, right?
From the first instance, family members and police believed that the attacker knew Rocio.
A number of false clues allegedly placed by Maria Dolores hindered the investigation.
It was a crime that provided material for TV programs, one of the first in that respect, because all the elements together were very paradigmatic of many underlying social questions. Fundamentally, lesbophobia.
Rocio's family says that Dolores is a hard woman, aggressive and very possessive.
Mentally, she's highly vindictive and she's very hard.
How can Alicia Hornos speak so shamelessly, tell so many lies, so much slander about my sister, knowing that my sister helped her raise her three children?
Spiteful, aggressive, calculating.
Very cold and calculating.
A character was created, an evil woman, a cold woman, a woman who had waited 4 years and made a plan to kill Rocio Vaninkoff because she hated her.
Dolores Vasquez in tears, then a sunny daytime view of a harbor, beaches and high-rise buildings. A title forms against a view across the sunny city, 1 year after arrest. A title, Courthouse, Malaga. A newspaper headline. Alicia Hornos claims that Dolores killed her daughter out of revenge. People cluster around the newspaper. Jose Maria Garzon Flores, Vaninkoff family lawyer.
I clearly remember the queues at the entrance.
because it had become a soap opera. People wanted to follow the trial day by day, and they didn't miss a single one. They were queuing for 4 or 5 hours to get into court and watch what would happen. I think that's the most brutal memory I have.
I'm going to follow the whole trial. I've got nothing else to do. Because I'm retired and I have nothing to do. Well, I'm on the side of the dead girl's mother. She's lost her daughter. Such terrible pain, because I'm a mother too. And that's a really big thing. And the other thing is, I see her as being very, very cold, very domineering.
Guardia Civil officers get out of a car.
Things were very difficult for Dolores Vázquez. She didn't come across well. She wasn't nice. She wasn't likable. She was a lesbian in 1999, one who might be sentenced to 15 years in prison.
A view into a dimly lit empty courtroom. People take their seats. The view moves in closer to the judge's empty high-back chair. Cut to the judge reading a document. Then the jury's box. Vázquez sits with her lawyer. A view of empty chairs. A framed photo of young Rocio held by Alicia. Women wear dark glasses. Jose Maria Garzón Flores.
It's true to say that it was a trial in which we had to wage a war on the streets, a war in the courtroom, and all the information that got thrown in and all that media hype really has an impact on a trial by jury.
Will the press please finish up quickly?
Witness interviews are ongoing. This will take a long time, as over 50 people have been called. For instance, this morning, here in the courtroom, we've watched a video from the program Informer Semanal. The video shows a civil guard stating that there is no direct evidence against Dolores Vázquez.
A lot remains to be seen. Everything is under judicial seal, and so we're going to let the investigation run its course. Take the steps it needs to find definitive proof, clarify everything that happened at that time, because thus far, the truth is that we don't know anything for sure. We have our theories, but we don't know what actually happened.
Paz Velasco de la Fuente.
Now, what if, given the lack of physical evidence, the civil guard produced a report that contained evidence that pointed to Dolores Vázquez, as well as a psychological profile?
The judge confers with a colleague.
Dolores Vázquez's hatred of Rocio practically became the central piece of evidence.
Courtroom audio of Francisco Montiano, prosecutor. But you have stated that you clashed because you were similar in character. You were both obstinate and stubborn and both wanted to impose your will.
Dolores Vázquez, courtroom audio.
Yes, Your Honor, but that doesn't mean we clashed in the sense that Rocio didn't love me, or I didn't love her, or that we argued. Rocio had a good relationship with me, better than her mother and her family think.
A domestic worker, I think she was Russian, if I remember correctly, revealed a very important and highly cinematographic fact, which is that at one time, as everyone remembers, there were lots of photos of her posted around the neighborhood, etc. But one of those photographs, she got a kitchen knife and started stabbing it.
When she did it with a knife and said, "This is my problem, this is my problem."
She explained, "I was at home and I was crying at the sight of Rocio's picture, and because my cleaner barely understands Spanish, I got a knife to show that Rocio had been killed."
Magistrates Court No. 6, Fuengirola, oral report.
So what did Dolores have going in her favor during the trial? Well, that she hadn't been seen at the scene of the crime, that the vehicle tire tracks did not match any of the vehicles she owned, that the fibers found didn't match Dolores' clothing.
It was shown that the fingerprints found on the garbage bags were proven not to be Dolores Vázquez's.
And she had an alibi. She came, she said that she'd been looking after her niece's child that day. And yet, that was not taken into account.
One statement that kept being repeated because it was being said in public was, She's not saying anything, as in, it had to be her, because she didn't show any remorse. It didn't seem, there was no sense of injustice, and that really influences a jury, always.
Paz Velasco de la Fuente.
The fact that Dolores Vázquez was a lesbian was used during the trial, let's say, as a way to attack her.
Highlighted phrases on a document focusing on homosexuality and sexual violence.
It was a way to show that Dolores Vázquez had the profile and the capacity to kill Rocío Vaninkoff.
More text is highlighted, emphasizing the link to homosexuality and sexual violence. Alicia Hornos, Courtroom Audio. When I went visiting or someone came to the house, she always introduced me as her sister because she was ashamed of our relationship. You think she never accepted your sexual orientation? I think she was traumatized. A close-up of Dolores in the courtroom. Dolores Vázquez's final statement. I did not kill Rocío. I did not see Rocío. All that I ask of you, of Spain, to the whole of Spain, because a lot has been said about me, is to find the culprits, because I did not do it. And they're out there, the culprits, possibly even here in this courtroom. You never had anything to hold against me, and never will, because I'm innocent. The view pulls back through the empty courtroom. People emerge from the court led by Dolores' sisters. Elvira Vázquez is interviewed.
Do you see any proof? You're in there just like I am. Do you see any clear proof? Or anything definitive that might send my sister to prison? It's just that you're journalists, right?
I want 20 years minimum. Because in 20 years' time, who's going to give me my daughter back? Not in 14 years or even 30, not ever.
This afternoon's big news is, without doubt, the verdict that will be announced to the audience in the Provincial Court of Malaga.
You can see the amount of media and the number of cameras that couldn't get into the courtroom.
Cut from the scrum of press to the empty courtroom. Audio. By a majority, we, the jury, find the accused, Doña Dolores Vázquez Mosquera, guilty of the crime of murder. Will you kindly be quiet? People rise from their seats. Dolores' head is covered with a jacket. Out we go, please. Everybody leave. People move along slowly. There are hugs and tears and stunned-looking expressions. Rocio's sister smiles as she makes a call. Alicia strides past the cameras.
I said to my sister, Jose, we're going to win. Well, this isn't winning, but justice will be done. And she said, I'm not so sure. And I said, justice will be done. And it has been done, thank God.
I can see the prosecutor of this complicated case from here. Let's see if we can talk to him.
Your first impression of the 15-year sentence? Your initial assessment?
Well, I asked 15 years, so I can't complain about 15 years in one day.
Prosecutor Francisco Montillano. Two police cars on a country road in sunshine. Dolores is in the back of the second unmarked car. They drive towards a correctional facility. A barrier with chains on drops back into place. A framed photo of Rocío, her desk with the lamp and a computer. Handwritten notes, pictures stuck to the wall. The bedroom with the single bed. The light fades from day to night through the arch-shaped window. A lamp and a clock glow on the bedside table, cut to black. An aerial view of a town at dusk and titles Coin, Andalusia, Spain, 14th of August 2003. The view looks down on red-tiled roofs. A trace on a map shows the route from La Cala de Mijas, 25 kilometers inland, to Coin. Blurred views of lights at night. An aerial view of parked cars under the glow of streetlights. A car drives slowly along the street. A pale light glows in the darkness. The view moves into a bedroom. There's a chest of drawers, a guitar, and a desk with an angle poised lamp. A teddy bear is propped against the pillows. There are ornaments on a high shelf, including a framed photo of a smiling young woman in a chair and the name Sonia on the wall. Encarna Guzman, Sonia Caramante's mother.
I remember. Everything about that day, just as it happened. I got up in the morning and I went to her room and she wasn't there. I called her friends and they said they'd left her at the door. They told me they'd left her at the door. And I said, well, she's not here. So I went to look, and from where? From our door, three houses before you reach my house. Well, in the tree, there was a shoe, a bag, her mobile on the ground. My husband's car had blood on it, and our neighbor's car had blood on it, too.
Bloodstains. Fireworks go off. Gabriel Jesus Clavijo Sanchez, mayor of Coin, 2003 to 2011.
It was August 14th. It was the last day of the daytime fair, and around 4 in the afternoon, a journalist from the SER radio station called asking me what I knew about the disappearance of a girl from the Coin fair. At that time, the first thing I told him was that I had no information and that no girl had gone missing in Coin. He assured me that this was the case. Then I started to see vehicles, media broadcast trucks. That then made me suspicious, and naturally, things started to make me feel uneasy. So I sent the police chief, and that's when he told me that Sonia disappeared early that morning, and that her parents had filed a report, and that they were investigating, making initial inquiries.
Bystanders and police vehicles, a gazebo outside Sonia's house.
You want to stand here? Can you hear better from here? A little closer?
A little closer, please.
Here, side by side. It's not too close for you. Don't get too close.
No, I'll just move the mic closer.
We'll stay here.
Just here, yeah?
The press with Sonia's parents.
Right. We don't know.
We don't know anything yet. And all I can say is if someone knows anything at all, there must be a friend who saw her or heard something or... Please say and let her go. Let her go because we've had enough, everything we're going through, because this is a lot. This is too much.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Sonia's mother stands by a wall and railing with trees behind. Is this okay? Yes, that's fine. Now this way, towards Lucerne, slowly. The video camera view pans towards the Swiss lakeside city. The lake.
So we got married in Coin, and my husband got a job in Switzerland, so I went with him, and that's where my three kids were born. The two older ones first, and then Sonia.
That's enough. Sonia beams for the camera. That's enough. Go on, say something. Hello. Sonia's filmed in her bedroom.
We had work there, and we stayed 26 years.
It's 7:45. Let's get going. Sonia has grown from a girl to a young woman.
And when the boys had finished their studies, Sonia wanted to move back to Spain. And we, well, so did we. And so, yes, we came here in 2001. And she settled right in. Of course, she had friends here. From where we used to come on holiday, she had cousins. She planned to stay in school, complete a baccalaureate or... But that wasn't to be.
Sonia's mother, older now, bites her lip. She sits reflected in the mirrors on a wardrobe. A newscast.
As the hours go by, the family of the 17-year-old who went missing in Coin, Malaga, yesterday is beginning to despair. A thorough search of the area is still underway, but the girl's belongings that have been found do not bode well. Some are stained with blood.
Police photos of sandals and a mobile phone. Ignacio San Martin, journalist, Sir Radio.
I seem to remember that there was also a broken indicator light in the Sonia Caravantes case. I know this because I know that civil guard officers were sent to make inquiries at every car workshop in the province of Malaga to see if any car of the kind they were looking for had come in to get an indicator light repaired.
We began several lines of investigation, such as a series of sexual assaults that had been committed in the area around Torremolinos and Benalmadena. And we also linked it to the disappearance of a girl in Motril, because the girl's profile was pretty similar. And so bearing in mind that they went missing when the fair was on, well, we started looking into all the fair workers that had been both in Motril and Coin.
That was Florentino Villabona Madeira, Police Commissioner Malaga, 2000 to 2004. You go up there and see if you see anything strange. Treat it as serious, even if you think it's not. Everything's important, clothes, a shoe, anything. You call me and I'll come running down. Searchers get in the back of a truck. A handmade missing poster of Sonia. Searchers stream down a sunny street.
People stepped up. That is, they, the public as a whole, was clear about saying, this is a girl who is one of us, a family that needs our help. And they began to work together, to donate not just their time, but everything that might be useful to the search. When you looked from the upstairs window, or as the day went by, it was moving, and I still get emotional. The fact was that a girl was missing, and we had to find her.
I'd like to say thank you from the bottom of my heart for everything that you're doing. From the youngest to the oldest, what they're doing is incredible, the effort they're making. And I don't have any other words than to say thank you so much. That's all I have to say.
Sonia's brother, Antonio.
Apart from that, the civil guard continued their inquiries, their investigation. But the most important thing was to find her alive.
A helicopter flies towards high, hazy hills. A high aerial view of scrubland. A title, Missing Day 5. Searchers carry long poles and bottles of water. They found her. People from Madrid called saying they found her. But it hasn't been confirmed yet. But she was found. Well. But where has she been found? No one knows. We get back, quick. They called from Madrid, on a TV in a bar. The girl's body was found today at midday, very close to Coin. Turn it up. There's no official confirmation yet, but it is feared it may be the body of Sonia Caravantes, who went missing on Thursday.
A body has finally been found. Of a woman? We fear the worst, but are still awaiting confirmation. The magistrate has just arrived. The criminal police are investigating. I've been in continual contact with the deputy minister, who has told me that they sent a forensic unit here as soon as they heard the news, which is at my and the family's full disposal.
Another man and Sonia's parents come out of their house. They get into a car which drives away. The official in the front seat makes a call on his mobile phone. The car heads up a dusty track.
It was near Monda, the neighboring village, and they saw her in a stream with... He'd put rocks on top of her and... Well, it had rained a little the night before and a lot had been washed away, but the dogs... They'd been there earlier but hadn't... But on that day, well, they found her under the rocks.
An aerial view of scrub, trees and dust roads, police tape and large rocks in a dry riverbed. Gate in a chain-link fence. Police wait around and police tape flutters in a breeze. Lourdes Garcia Ortiz, Judge, Carabante's case.
That day, the victim had been at the fair in Coin. She said goodbye to her friends just a few meters from her front door, and she was attacked by the perpetrator. He strikes her on various parts of her body, leaving her partially unconscious. She isn't, of course, fully awake, as it was a violent assault. She tries to defend herself. He puts her in the car and he drives her at least 11 or so kilometers away to a place. And at that place, he inflicts both internal and external injuries, and he strangles her with a t-shirt and then finally kills her.
Cut from the riverbed to Sonia's room. There are pictures and pins on a corkboard. A pen lies next to a recorder and sheet music. The curtains waft in a slight breeze. In sunny daytime, a large crowd follows the funeral cortege, the cars festooned with flowers. A vertical view of rooftops.
It shocked everyone. Everyone was worried. Girls didn't leave their houses to go to the fair or to parties or out onto the street. There was a sense of fear, a permanent sense of fear, but not just in Coin, in neighboring towns too.
Hills lead down to the sea.
Bad because I have two nieces and a daughter and, yes, I'm worried.
They say it must be. It must be someone close to her, because she wasn't far from Coin.
We don't know who that man is. He's out there somewhere, the girls. Well, of course, my daughter's 15 too. It's a worry.
Paz Velasco de la Fuente.
The speed with which Sonia was found means that, yes, it is possible to extract and examine and analyze scientific evidence.
During a meeting held in the deputy minister's office, Colonel Paco Gabianos stated that they'd found traces or evidence on Sonia Carabante's hands.
These biological remains were analyzed immediately, entered into the criminal evidence DNA database, and found to match. With what? With another genetic profile they had, which was from the cigarette stub collected 2.5 meters away from Rocio Vaninkoff's bloodstain on the esplanade. When they cross-check the two genetic profiles, they find that they are a perfect match.
On a document, DNA of a male.
The person who was on the esplanade in 1999 was the same person who attacked and killed Sonia Carabantes.
A missing poster for Sonia.
I seem to remember that we were the first ones to realize that there was a DNA match. That, well, that was a bombshell.
Little by little, light clears the dark. An English cigarette stub and traces of skin under Sonia Carabantes' fingernails. The DNA found in each of these is the same.
There was something to connect the two missing girls. It was so... so serious. So painful. And it was also something so awful, especially for someone who'd spent, I believe, 17 months in jail. And from then on, everything started to move really quickly.
Newspapers and photos of Dolores, guilty, verdict, guilty, 15 years for murder.
I hope the culprits, whoever they are, pay for this and serve a full sentence. In the two-week trial, there was no mention of the cigarette butt. Lots of nonsense, but no cigarette butt.
Evidence is still appearing. Now exonerates the accused. Until now, Dolores Vasquez.
At this point of impasse in the investigation and in the lines of inquiry that we'd begun, we received a phone call from Fuengirola police station asking if I could please travel to Fuengirola, as there was a woman, English of Chilean origin, who wanted to talk to us and give us some information.
A dark, empty office and a document in a fax machine. Cecilia King, Tony's ex-wife.
I met Tony in 96. I knew him as Tony King. He presented himself as Tony King to me. I didn't know much about him at the beginning, really. He doesn't talk about much about his life. When I meet him, he's very jealous. He's always wanting to meet me, to take me here, to take me there, and everybody thinks he's lovely and protecting me. So, and I do, I think, oh, he's very nice, he wants to look after me. So that's the kind of man he appears to be, that he's all on your side. So we just started a relationship, and 5 months on, I'm pregnant, don't know what to do. I tell him I'm pregnant, and we just end up getting married when Sabrina is born. And we end up in Spain because my sister lives there, and that's September 1997.
A title, 2003, scrolls back to 1997 as a plane lands at dusk. A photo of Tony and little Sabrina.
Tony starts acting suspicious in Spain, telling lies, starts disappearing, starts losing phones, crashing cars, and things like that. And I kept speaking to my family, saying, he's not quite right, I don't know what's wrong, but something's not right, and I'm not right. I just think, oh, I better watch him because he's scaring me. But I don't know why. I just feel.
Tony smiles in photos, a title, 1997, scrolls to 1999.
I remember being in my apartment with Sabrina, my daughter. Tony borrowed my friend's car, whatever, but he comes in at one point, it's late at night, and he goes into the bathroom, and he's in the bathroom locked for a while, and then he comes out, and then he goes out again. And then I go and look in the bathroom, and it's all spotless and clean. Everything's clean, and I'm really concerned about that because he's not usually clean. He usually leaves everything on the floor. So it made me wonder. It made me think, oh, what happened here? That night, Rocío disappears. And then that's what made me suspect. And I told all my relatives, all my friends, my sister, everybody. Everybody thought that I was crazy, that how can Tony do that? It's me thinking stupid things, you know. I was the crazy one, the one that thought her husband had killed someone. That's how I was. So in the end, I just separate from Tony.
The couple smile in photos, a title. 1999 becomes 2003.
Cecilia King.
Cecilia King, who was a little anxious and worried about what she was going to tell us, recalls that when her ex-husband came to either collect or drop off their daughter, she noticed that he had a scar or a wound on the back of his left hand.
So what happens is Sonia goes missing in Coín. So I suspect something really bad because he had a bandage on his hand that day and it comes on the TV. And me and David, my boyfriend, both of us just surprised and shocked. Wow, not another girl going missing. And we both look at each other and we both say, Tony, straight away we both, it's got to be Tony.
Once we had taken Cecilia's statement, I spoke to an English colleague, John O'Neill, who is at the embassy, and I asked him about Tony Alexander King.
I got a telephone call from Tino Biovanna,
on the 14th of September 2003. I contacted the on-call in London, and very soon I had a very alarming return telephone call. Clearly, this was a very dangerous individual from the antecedent history that was being told to me.
He tells me that they know Tony under the name Tony Bromwich, and that he'd committed a series of sexual assaults in London, which makes us more confident that we're pursuing a good line of inquiry.
So they found King. They then set about doing a surveillance on him.
We find that he's working in a pub and lives with a Spanish girl in Alhorín el Grande.
A wide view and a map tray showing Alhorín el Grande, 15 kilometers to the east of Coin.
We set up surveillance of the pub and see him arrive at work. When he finishes work, he surprises us by going to a school, and the school had a house, which is where he lived. Inside the grounds, he had a car, a Mazda with British license plates, and the indicator light was broken.
The key now was time. The key was we need to get a DNA sample from this man. And they did get a DNA sample, maybe from a glass that he'd been drinking from, maybe another discarded cigarette. And they did what you would expect to do. They checked it, and guess what? It matched.
A smiling picture of Tony in a car with a British number plate behind, a police photo of a discarded cigarette, a helicopter in bright blue sky, a title, 1 month after the murder.
I've nothing to say.
You have nothing to say?
Police and a view of Tony's house in the school grounds. He's brought out with a cloth covering his head. A camera zooms in through the school gates as Tony is placed in a car. A police officer blocks the camera view. A car and police van speed away from the premises and head off in heavy traffic.
So that was it. King was arrested and allegedly made confessions in the first few days, both to the National Police and then to the Guardia Civil.
And so we were sure that he was behind those two disappearances and those two murders.
Tony, in handcuffs, is escorted by a whole group of Guardia Civil, two missing posters of the dead girls.
After this case was concluded, obviously it was a major incident in Spain. And of course there was a twist. There was a twist to the first case because someone had already been convicted of the murder of Rocío Vanikoff. A female, Dolores Vázquez, had been sentenced to 15 years. So this made it even more of a story.
Journalists gather outside a prison.
At the time of King's arrest, Dolores was already out of prison, waiting for a new trial, as the High Court of Justice of Andalusia had quashed the sentence. Why? Because the jury only had circumstantial evidence, but also because they hadn't said what had actually made them believe that Dolores Vázquez was guilty.
Dolores strolls out to face the press.
It's so sunny, isn't it?
A title, first public appearance after 519 days in prison. Dolores sits at a table with a row of microphones and a phalanx of cameras at a short distance.
I wouldn't wish prison on anyone. I've been through some terrible times. For many months, I'd rather not talk about it. I spent 2 months, over 3 months, in solitary confinement. Well, and what else is there to say? I'm not saying my arrest was illegal. Any one of us, if I was under suspicion, I had nothing to hide, just as I have nothing to hide or cover up now. I came forward and then, well, then they started asking me questions and saying, it was you, and it was you. And it was very powerful brainwashing, very powerful. Very powerful. They even told me how everything would go, that I would be famous, that no one would believe me, that they would take me to court, that the trial would be short, 5-6 months. They would find me guilty through a jury. Well, that's what happened.
A journalist opens a notebook.
I believe that the sentence, apart from clearly lacking a motive, was not impartial. That is, just think of the number of television programs that directly accused Dolores Vázquez when no evidence had been found. All that information, all the public commentary that appeared in the press, on television, the jury and the judge read it, saw it, and heard it daily.
Dolores leaves the press conference.
When the real killer was found and it was clear that Dolores Vázquez had nothing to do with it, I started to think, to realize how even I had taken on all the lesbophobia spread by the media, etc. How I had believed all the information that wasn't information, that were biases, etc., right? So then, well, I started to research what had been said in the media, and I was a little shocked. So I decided to write a book.
Beatriz Gimeno, author, The Construction of the Evil Lesbian.
Over time, Dolores Vázquez was attributed with qualities that were seen as being masculine. Some were completely ridiculous, right? But they threw things at her. When you look at them, well, for example, they suddenly revealed that she did karate, like it was a bad thing. Or that she did sport, like it was a bad thing. That she had a gravelly voice, that she was bossy, that she was authoritative. Taken together, the aim was to create the picture of a masculine woman, right? With the negative connotations that might have. They said she was barren, that she envied a woman who was able to give birth and be a mother, that these are unhealthy relationships that lead to, well, unhealthy relationships that can lead to murder. All that rage actually stemmed from a social environment that couldn't accept that kind of relationship. Is it possible that the relationship between Rocío and Dolores Vázquez was bad because deep down, your daughter didn't accept your romantic tie to another woman?
Dolores and Alicia speak on a bench, a photo of Dolores in handcuffs.
We were stunned. If they were accusing the wrong person, if you don't have enough evidence, at least don't accuse someone else, right? Because if they'd known, just more. If they'd kept investigating and not focused on just one person, they would have found him. And so what happened to my girl would have been avoided.
Sonia's mother, a title, England. Christine P. Bluer, artist. A view down a narrow path between stone cottages.
In 2003, when he was arrested for the murders in Spain, I was watching the news and a British subject, Alexander King, has been arrested, and I started shouting at the telly, pointing, being very upset, no, that is not Alexander King, that is Tony Bromidge. I couldn't believe it. Once again, that is a face I can't forget.
A title, 2003, and a photo of Tony smiling. The date scrolls back to 1985.
In 1985, there were a series of quite alarming offences against young women in the north part of London, in the Holloway district of North London. The press said the Holloway Strangler, they give him a name, the press often do this sort of thing, but it sort of portrayed what was happening. Women were being strangled. My recollection, there were seven victims. I think the youngest girl was 15, and maybe the oldest woman was in her early 30s.
John O'Neill, International Liaison Officer, Malaga, a small lift, and a close-up on the buttons.
It was 1985. As I went up the steps towards my flat, I glanced and thought, oh, somebody's there. It's just somebody else getting the lift, you know, it's a normal occurrence. Probably the first blow was the hardest. I hit the floor. I had this fracture in my skull. He tied my scarf tight. And started to interfere with me, lifting my top, putting his hands in my trousers. He couldn't undo my trousers because I was pregnant, and I tied my trousers with a scarf. I managed to get up, and he got me in a chokehold, strangling me. He didn't speak at all, and my hair was everywhere, blood was everywhere. I didn't know what to hold, my head, my hand, so I'm kind of cowering in the corner. And that's when I said, please don't kill my baby. I'm pregnant, please don't kill my baby. And that was my moment. I touched something in him. And I quietly whispered, come on, run away, run away. I won't tell anyone. Just run away. You know, I won't tell anyone. And he did.
A photo of young Christine at a newspaper headline. Costa killer suspect is Holloway strangler. Cecilia King.
I learnt that he'd changed his name when I read it in the newspaper, like everybody else. I didn't realise he'd changed his name because he was the Holloway Strangler. I never knew that. I didn't know that at all when I found that out. It was a shock. It was horrible. I wasn't normal for a long time. It was disgusting to find out that that man that I'd married was doing that, and he'd done that to them girls. I'm so sorry.
A photo of Tony handcuffed in a car.
Bromwich, as he was called then, was arrested for these. Initially, like in Spain, when he was interviewed, he admitted that he'd done this and then retracted that later on, of course, during a trial. So he got 10 years in prison at that time and went to prison in 1986. I think the trial was finished and came out in 1991. And within three months, I believe, he was rearrested for a further offence against a woman. With a firearm, he was charged with robbery, although there was a sexual overtone to the attack. And he went back to prison. Within a year, he was back in prison and came out again in, around about 96. And then he'd been identified by several people phoning a television programme called Crime Watch in the UK, who'd identified him, believe it or not, attempting a further assault on a young Hungarian au pair.
The titles of the Crime Watch programme. Nick Ross, former host, Crime Watch.
We started Crime Watch in 1983, and I presented it until about 2007. The programme which we featured, King, or Bromwich, as we knew him then, and this particular episode was, this particular appeal for Bromwich for King was just a piece of CCTV slotted into it.
Late on a Sunday night, about 3 weeks ago, an au pair was assaulted as she walked home near Leatherhead in Surrey. Police believe one man in particular may be able to help. He's one of the passengers at Epsom Station. It's about 11:30 on Sunday, August the 10th. Is this you? Were you on the platform too? If you were there at Leatherhead or at Epsom, do call, even if you don't recall the man. And please ring right away if it's you or if you can tell us who he is.
I contacted the programme and told them who I thought it was, who I knew it was. And by the time they found where he lived, got it together, he'd left the country and gone to Spain.
If you've got 15 million people watching a television programme and your face is on it very clearly, or suspected that you might have been caught on CCTV, the sensible thing to do would be get out of the country as quickly as you can.
Christine looks through a portfolio of pictures and some negatives.
I did have a band before being attacked. I was going to be signed with Virgin, but I lost my voice. I think when you're traumatised, one of the first things to show nerves is your voice. I couldn't sing.
Christine sits in a high-backed easy chair in her cottage, staring off. Sonia's mother, Encarna Guzman, sits on a bed, staring off.
Once they arrested that criminal person, well, that's when they started to say something about involving Interpol, asking the Spanish authorities where this person was.
When we'd heard here in Spain that this report existed, well, naturally it caused a certain level of fear. And both the government and the opposition used the case politically through a parliamentary questioning about the case to the Interior Minister, Angela Cebes, and why they hadn't stepped in.
In Spain, the King case has been discussed in the chamber.
Yes, the Minister of the Interior, Angela Acebes, asked to appear in Parliament to explain the investigation into the murders of Rocío Vanikoff and Sonia Carabantes. The Minister explained that the British police sent a notice asking for confirmation that he lived in Spain and outlined the crimes of which he was accused. But the British police described the notice as being of low importance and didn't request Tony Alexander King's extraction. The matter was filed.
They did notify, as far as I'm aware, through Interpol, that this guy was there. And I think they may even have had him approached to see whether or not he would willingly come back to be investigated or to be interviewed in relation to the Leatherhead offence. But clearly, he wasn't going to do that. He wouldn't have chosen to do that.
The grand colonnaded portico of the Spanish Chamber of Deputies. Felipe Alcaraz, United Left Party MP. Minister, Scotland Yard on the 25th September 1998 located, with your help, the whereabouts in Mijas of Tony Alexander King. You were informed who he was. You were informed of his crimes, the risk he posed. He is a potential threat to women in Spain. To Ángel Acebes, State Secretary, 2002-2004. Victorino Mayoral, Socialist Party MP. What doesn't add up is the enormity of the fact that you had identified a dangerous criminal and did not record this information or share it correctly. A notification from Interpol cannot be marked in the way that the police force that you direct did.
It is true that we received a fax from Interpol in London, informing us that Tony Alexander King, not that he was to be detained, but that we should look into him. At no time did they reply. But that's normal because we receive many, many faxes from Interpol regarding the presence of all kinds of people on the Costa del Sol, not just for sexual assaults, but for drug trafficking, murder, fraud, for a range of crimes.
Begoña Lasagabasta, Basque Nationalist Party MP. These were deplorable acts that caused great suffering, especially for the families of these people, Rocío Vanikoff and Sonia Carabantes, but also the suffering of another person, Dolores Vázquez, who probably had to go through a long ordeal. Ángel Acebes, State Secretary. Applying the general principles of any investigation to the Rocío Vanikoff case, we can state that the Guardia Civil focused its investigations in one direction on one person, Dolores Vázquez, who appeared to match the criminal profile that was considered most plausible. Lion statues outside the palatial government building. Sonia's mother.
The authorities have never apologized to me. Minister Acebes, who knows all about this. No one has been in touch with me. Did I have to lose my daughter so they could catch their killer? Because they caught him, because my daughter defended herself.
A view across waste ground towards the sea, a row of white apartment buildings. Alicia Hornos approaches a shrine to Rocío. She crosses herself, then picks up a small urn and kisses it.
I can tell you that I wasn't the one who put Maria Dolores Vázquez in prison. Right at the beginning, the police told me that they were going to lock up Maria Dolores Vázquez, that she was the suspect, that she had killed Rocío. So if anyone needs to apologize to that woman, then it should be the police, because I don't have to apologize to anyone. I didn't lock anyone up.
Sonia's parents, with their legal team, approached the press. Microphones are held out to them. People are interviewed in a crowd. I'm a bit nervous, yes, a bit nervous. Shaven-headed Tony is led into court shouting, "I'm innocent."
Soy inocente.
Lourdes Garcia Ortiz, Judge Carabante's case.
The trial had a real impact because, fortunately, this kind of thing doesn't happen every day. It's a very serious event because it also seems the victim was chosen at random, which means pure chance determined this would happen to that person, right? And that has an impact at the level of, at all levels, as judges and as human beings.
The back of Tony's head and the judge's bench.
I think the evidence was so strong that in the end he admitted it. Maybe because now he feels like the main protagonist. I remember seeing him on television being transported in a police vehicle, the way he addressed the media, but mostly wanting to be the main protagonist, rather than out of any sense of regret or the sense that he'd done anything wrong.
They come in for a crime of murder! They are criminals!
I've spent 7 years, 2 months and 12 days asking who killed my daughter.
What outcome are you hoping for?
Justice, justice, justice for my daughter once and for all.
Tony King.
In one of his statements to the detectives, Tony King tries to incriminate Dolores Vasquez, to drag her back into the penal process.
I don't know anything about this man, nothing at all. The only thing I know is that I've already been condemned once, and I am scared to death that it'll happen again. I am innocent, gentlemen, and I want the court to see my innocence. I shouldn't have to be here now justifying myself. I shouldn't have to justify anything. But I'm being asked to do it because of public opinion, because Spanish society demands that, on top of everything, I prove my innocence for my Rocio and for poor Sonia and for many others.
No, he did it alone, always. He always acted alone. Whenever he went out alone. And he took those girls, he assaulted them, and he killed them.
Dolores Vasquez had very bad luck, but she also had very good luck. Dolores Vasquez might otherwise still be in prison today, or have got out only a short time ago. It's true that a retrial was ordered. No one knows what the outcome of the second trial would have been, but if the true guilty party in this case hadn't been found, no one knows what would have happened to Dolores Vasquez. Views of Alicia's house and front gate.
Today, the Malaga Court of Appeal has exonerated Dolores Vasquez for the murder of Rocío Vanikoff, thus bringing to an end an ordeal that Dolores Vasquez has undergone for over 4 years.
A large, whitewashed villa, Villa Rosa. I'll bet anyone, and we can check the files, that the arrest of Dolores Vasquez takes up many more pages than her acquittal.
None of the journalists who wrote utterly offensive nonsense about her ever said we were wrong. How awful. How did we get so carried away? In the way that I might say or talk about the movement, right? How awful. We were so wrong. How could we? Even we get carried away in the tide that carried us away, right? No one really said that. It was as if, well, next. We found the murderer. That woman, whatever. Next, right. And, well, that's awful too, right?
The first person who should apologize is the person who caused the damage, and the damage was obviously caused by the system. And as far as I know, the state hasn't compensated Dolores Vasquez. I think that's a grave error. The view pulls up and away from the site where Alicia first found the bloodstain on the ground. She arranges flowers around a photo of Rocío.
I talk to this one a lot, to this picture, because she's always laughing. I say, you're always laughing at your mother. I say, you look so pretty, my love. You're so pretty. How sad that you're not here with me. She seems to laugh at me and understand.
Alicia smiles at the photo of her daughter.
She was a joy, and she was always kissing and hugging me, and you're so pretty. That's what she was like. Now I'm okay, pretty much. I'm alone. without my little girl. Because when people say, yes, you're strong, so is your husband, it's not that I'm strong. It's that I don't have any other choice than just keep going.
Encarna stares expressionlessly. Cecilia.
It's a really big shock. I can't explain how big of a shock and how much washing I've done to try and get rid of Tony, you know, the feel of Tony on me, yeah. It's left me scared of men, totally. But what kept me going was my daughter and my son. I had to look after them, so I just have to be a mum.
Christine holds up photo negatives to the light.
I've been given an opportunity to speak. I think it might help me have a bit more closure. That what happened to me is important enough for you to come.
Christine lowers her eyes. A panoramic view of a city and a title, Madrid 2013, Dolores Vázquez.
The struggle isn't over for me. It's not so much about the monetary compensation. It's more to show Spanish society that I am totally innocent, that I always have been. So that when I walk down the street, there aren't any little nudges. Or when I go to El Corte Inglés to try on a pair of shoes. Well, I say El Corte, any shop. And within 20 minutes, I am surrounded by women. Oh, look who it is. Look, I'm still asking for someone to apologize.
Titles. Tony Alexander King was convicted of the murders of Rocio Vaninkoff and Sonia Carabantes. He was sentenced to 53 years. Dolores Vázquez has not received compensation. No one took responsibility. No one asked her for forgiveness. Audio description by Voice Archive, written and voiced by Roland Bierne. The credits follow. If you or someone you know has experienced sexual violence, please visit www.wannatalkaboutit.com to find more information and crisis resources. Copyright 2021, Netflix Worldwide Entertainment LLC, all rights reserved.
A red letter N unfolds into a spectrum of colors.